Hey, you know, I thought your fiance was coming. Or did he get smart and bail out over Lake Michigan?
Chris is parking the car. And Max, there's something I should tell you. Something I should have told you a long time ago.
Hey, whoa. Did I used to date this guy?
Doubtful.
Oh, a parking space opened up right out front. Hey, guys.
Everybody, meet Chris. Hey, girl.
Hello, and welcome to Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast where we talk about the LGBT-focused episodes of classic sitcoms. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin, and that's the first time you got it right on the first try.
Fuck you. If that intro did not tip you off, today we are talking about Living Single, specifically the episode Woman to Woman, or as we're going to call it, The Girls from Living Single Throw a Lesbian Bridal Shower, which aired... Date.
March 21st, 1996.
Thank you, guest.
You're welcome.
Dr. Justin. And we have a special guest to discuss this episode of Living Single, Dr. Justin Young.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming here.
On the gayest episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how, like, is there a gay, like, cutoff? Like, how gay do I have to be?
Well, if you look at this chart behind me.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure I didn't have to be the gayest gay to be on the gayest episode.
No, you just have to like a TV show.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. I love TV shows.
Have we had straight time before?
No,
ooh.
Never.
Oh.
No.
Oh, we might have to break ground and find some.
No.
My business partner, Catherine, is going to be on at some point because she wants to talk about Absolutely Fabulous.
Ooh.
Which I also want to talk about, so this is allowed.
Ooh.
Also, she's my boss.
I feel like a lot... That's also a good reason to have her on. But I feel like a lot of AbFab episodes are gay.
I told her to pick one because she's the expert and she knows more about than I do. So she has, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Perfect.
Justin.
Yes.
You are... I think you're the first person who was a guest on the movie podcast, You Have to Watch This Movie, who is now a guest on Gayest Episode Ever.
Yes.
And as we discussed before, you are an interesting multi-hyphenate. You're a doctor.
Yes.
Filmmaker.
Correct.
Voiceover artist.
That too.
Amazing Race contestant.
That also is true.
Yes. Did you win?
We did not win. But we had fun. It was a great experience. Highly recommend it.
I mean,
I'm not doing it.
It would be very stressful.
You two should do it together.
Absolutely. We do enough together.
We'd both die. Yeah, we'd both be dead.
I don't think death is particularly involved with the
first
show.
Time for everything.
Well, yeah. There you go.
They'd have to cancel the entire season and be like, oh, we can't air that one. That was too bad. Those two guys died. Justin, the last time you were on one of our podcasts, you were talking about the movie you directed, which was not easily viewable online back then, but now it is.
Yes. It had a festival run last year, so that was exciting, and that was why it wasn't readily available. Mm-hmm. But now you can see it on, let's see, Vimeo, mm-hmm. online at thatsmeontheright.com. The movie is called That's Me on the Right.
Hence, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know? But yeah, it was super exciting. It was a lot of fun, and hopefully I will be making another or a bunch of others very, very soon.
Will they also be gay in nature, probably?
Actually, that's a yes. Oh. There are a couple shorts that I want to work on. There's another short that a friend wants me to direct, which I need to get back to and make sure that that happens. Mm-hmm. And then also I've been working on a pilot that actually has a gay slant to it as well. And a feature. So that's not particularly gay, but the rest of them are. Right.
I mean, you had us going there for a second, and then you kind of lost us with the not gay part, but... Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
It'll be the gayest
feature ever.
Is it an allegory for homosexuality?
No, it's kind of like a historical drama, like modern day historical drama / heist movie. And that's all I'm going to say.
All right. You said too much. I'm going to research it.
Exactly.
And find out who is gay.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Since you're our guest, I'm going to ask you first, what was your experience with the show we're talking about this episode, Living Single.
I just felt like Living Single was one of those like pivotal black sitcoms of the 90s. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, in a lot of ways groundbreaking in a way that we didn't really like realize at the time, or at least I didn't notice at the time. I just thought it was like a great show. And, you know, I remember watching it. I can't remember if it was before Martin or after Martin, mm-hmm. but I felt like it was part of that like contingent of black shows that Fox was kind of married to for a while.
Yeah, it was a nice little family of shows, like starting with In Living Color and branching out from there.
Exactly.
Like, was Rock part of this?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then Rock Live.
Ooh, we count that as the same show.
So there is a gay episode. There is a gay episode of Rock. Rock's brother is gay.
Rock's brother.
We're totally
gay.
Talking about it.
And I think the brothers play like Richard Roundtree or something. And I want to do that next season. That one was brought to my attention fairly recently, but that would be a fun one to do.
That was an incredible show, actually.
Yeah.
And really ahead of its time. And really, like, the acting on that show was, like, pretty sublime.
It reminds me of this little Norman Lear revival that's happened where, like...
Ooh, good point.
They feel like, you know, half-hour-long plays.
Yes.
Like stage plays, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
Glenn, what was your experience with this show?
I watched its first season when it was on Sundays between Martin and Married with Children. But when it moved to Thursdays, it lost out to must-see TV for me. But I would catch it every now and then in reruns on UPN, when UPN was a thing.
Right. What did UPN become?
CW.
CW.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I remember really liking Max and not liking Sinclair.
Oh.
I know.
Why?
I felt that
offensive, and I don't know why, but I want you to elaborate.
Max is mean, and I like that, and Sinclair is nice, and I didn't like that. And she just felt tonally... out of whack with the rest of the show for me.
I kind of liked how like
loopy.
Bubbly and like, you know, the comic relief, the obvious comic relief that was there for Sinclair, played incredibly by Kim Coles.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, like, I think the strongest and the best part of that show was definitely Max.
Yeah.
Played incredibly by Erica Alexander.
Cousin Pam.
Which I did not remember until Glenn told me.
Yes.
I did not remember that Huxtable like affiliation at all.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of overlap, particularly from our this episode as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Shayla is memorable as Charmaine from A Different World. And
Cosby Show.
Yes, which...
which we call the Felisa Rashad Show.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's actually... I like that.
The John Goodman Show and the Felisa Rashad Show. Yeah.
Mess.
I didn't watch this show because at the point it was on, first of all, I did not realize it started in 1993. I would have guessed that it started later than that, but that is also important that we're going to talk about very shortly. But at that point, I was very sensitive about watching things that were women's entertainment because I started to realize that that was problematic. So this was something I was scared to be seen watching.
Did that mean you also did not watch The Nanny?
We didn't have CBS.
Oh.
Wait, what? How?
Oh, so I grew up in the country and like we didn't have cable. We just had antenna and we were far enough out that
there's that country coming out.
We just didn't get CBS there. So I didn't grow up with any CBS stuff. So no Sybil, no Nanny, no Murphy Brown. This is all stuff I never experienced.
This is why you're a bad gay, because you didn't watch Sybil.
Ooh, I didn't watch Sybil. Am I like excommunicated from this podcast?
I'm going to set this room on fire.
I mean, I know of it and I didn't really watch Murphy Brown either. So like, I don't feel like you, I mean, I know how huge Murphy Brown was. I just feel like at the age I was when it came on, it just wasn't on my radar. Like I couldn't get into it.
I think Murphy Brown might have been a harder one for young kids to get into, but a lot of people really loved it growing up.
I mean, I feel like they were sucked into it like through their parents because a lot of parents would watch it. And then that's how people would watch it. I remember trying to watch it and just not really getting it. It was a little over my head.
She's like, I don't know who Boutros Ghali is at this point, so this joke is not funny to me.
You both are women haters.
That's not what I said.
That's what I heard.
How is that even possible?
I
said Max is the best part of the show.
I think we all agree that this show works for us pretty well, and it is mostly a woman-focused show. If you don't remember Living Single very well, it ran from August 31st, 1993 to January 1st, 1998 on Fox, 118 episodes, and it centered on technically on four female friends living in Brooklyn. And those were Khadija, played by Queen Latifah. And what was her first non-musical like introduction to America, basically? Like her first acting? Yeah, this is 3 years before Set It Off, which is weird because I would have imagined that Set It Off was the first thing that happened. No, this was her first thing. She did a sitcom.
I mean, surprised. I feel like Set It Off was like a big deal. Yeah. Like I could see this being a warm up to that for her to like prove herself for like Set It Off.
I mean, Set It Off is also a four women ensemble like feature.
I mean, Set It Off is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. I actually want to research and rewatch it for the heist film I want to write.
So we had when Nicole Byer did the movie podcast, she mentioned that like she finds Queen Latifah's death scene and Set It Off hilarious. So I rewatched it today. It does take a really long time for her to die. And she's like acting the hell out of it. But like
really acting the hell out of it. And almost to like a superhuman kind of like that would rival probably like a Marvel movie kind of death at this point. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that's supposed to be a pivotal like moment. Cause doesn't whose character is it? Jada's character. Isn't she watching it happen? Is she like, pulls away on the bus.
One of the bands watching, I wasn't sure who it was.
I think it's her because, I mean, she's the only one, you know, spoiler alert. She's the only one at the end that, like, you know, goes off into the sunset.
We can spoil a movie that came out in 1996.
But. No, I agree. Oh, we can. It's fine. Oh, okay. It's fine. Like, it's totally fine. People should still watch it because it's amazing.
The only other thing she'd done before this was House Party 2. And she became basically the glue that holds the cast together on this. She is Khadija, the editor of Flavor Magazine. And it's very nice.
Is that a cooking magazine?
It is not.
It is not.
It is not. It is an urban culture magazine. And she, it's weird to think about it being realistic that someone at her age could be the editor of a print publication. And that was like a job you can actually have like in 1993. That's not something that really happens anymore.
Like, remember print?
Yeah. Fondly.
But I feel like for a magazine of that type, if it was, you know, if she kind of started it and, you know, created it and watched it grow, like, yeah, that would be something that she could have essentially had happen, right?
It's realistic at the point this TV series takes place. It's just not something that's going to happen now.
True.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, that, I mean, like, that's like maybe like she could be a influencer.
She would have,
and like
she
her would have an Instagram handle. Yeah, it would be like, I don't know, Khadija Flava at.
She would actually have a podcast, is what it would
oh,
be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That would be what there it you is. Go.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Drew, your water glasses make me super nervous.
Okay, so then there's Sinclair, who I initially thought she was the Rose Dylan of this show.
She's the Woody.
She's the Phoebe.
Oh yeah,
she's the Phoebe, and she's.
I never really watched that show, but okay.
Phoebe's like the dumb, flighty one who says like.
Phoebe dumb.
Yeah, she's because I feel like I know enough of that show that she constantly like proves herself to be like a good friend and
spacey.
Attentive,
spacey, maybe she's alternative,
spacey. Yeah, that's good. That's
crunchy.
Good.
So I watched
with the heart of gold.
Probably most of the episodes of the first two seasons and a big chunk of the third season. And there are times when Sinclair is written to be so dumb that I worry about her welfare. I'd be like, is she okay?
Yeah, I worry about her living in New York.
Yeah, I'm glad that she's like still there. She is played very well by Kim Coles, original In Living Color cast member Kim Coles, who I know is probably most familiar to Glenn as from Frasier.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She played, what's her name?
Dr. Mary.
Dr. Mary, who is a recurring, probably the only person of color to recur on Frasier.
I mean, that's probably true. Yeah.
Maybe Mercedes Raul and her. And she actually almost got her own spinoff. That was something because the character was fairly successful.
She was fantastic.
Really?
She's really good on the show. And Kelsey Grammer liked her. And there was some talk for a bit that Dr. Mary might get her own spinoff, which would have been great because the Cheers line would have kept going. It didn't happen. But what did happen is that Kelsey Grammer was the producer on Girlfriends, which
yes.
is like, oh, like you made this show and you didn't put Kim Coles on it. Like she could have had something to do on that show. But also Girlfriends, 172 episodes.
No.
172 episodes.
It's a good show.
But like, I just didn't realize it was on for that long. That's
like
eight
people
seasons.
Love that show.
Yeah.
And I think there was a talk about maybe a Girlfriends movie at one point.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Now, Tracy Ellis Ross is too fancy to do that, probably.
I don't know. She might, like, revisit it. I don't know.
She's really proud of it. She mentioned it in one of those sitcom actress roundtables where she was like, we got syndicated. I was like, hey, good for you.
No, she's proud of that. Like, I mean, it was huge for her.
Third is Regine, who is played by Kim Fields, who's essentially playing Blair from Facts of Life. Like, she upgraded from being 2D on Facts of Life. Now she gets to be the Blair, which makes sense because she's so fucking cute. on this show. And she's like materialistic and kind of narcissistic.
Kind of narcissistic.
Narcissistic with a heart of gold.
They soften her out a little bit more later on. Like, I think she loses her job working for the TV show and has to like figure shit out a little bit.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that happens.
Just knowing that she had to play little 2D on the roller skates for so long, it's nice to see her playing basically a diva. And then she spars in a very Blair and Joe Facts of Life fashion with Max, played by Erica Alexander, who's, she's not the bitchy one. She's the sharp one.
She's the hard one.
She's the successful one. She's a lawyer. Yeah, she's a lawyer. She, you know, hard worker. The one that's just trying to make it and just the best part. I think one of the best parts of the show.
Yeah.
100%. Yes. Hilarious. Great physical comedy. Great comic timing. She's like incredible.
She's also on Black Lightning now, which I have not seen yet. And I'm very excited that she apparently has a recurring role in that. The lead on Black Lightning is the guy that Khadija marries at the end of the show.
Oh, that's right. Scooter. She was also one of the cops in Get Out.
Was she?
Mm-hmm.
I did not recognize her from
that. Yes.
Yeah. She's an incredible actress. I wish, like, there's a lot of, like, supporting roles that she kind of pops into. And every time she comes up on screen, it's a revelation.
She also hasn't really aged a day.
Yeah, that's why it took me a second, because, like, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. She's kind of brilliant. Like, I really love her and wish she had more work.
So then there's also Kyle and Overton, who are the guys who live across the hall. Kyle is, like, obsessed with clothes and very image conscious. And he's played by T.C. Carson.
Didn't they live upstairs? Not across the hall. They live upstairs.
Okay. So they're like the neighbors.
But the other apartment also has an upstairs. I was trying to figure out the layout of this brownstone.
Oh, does it really?
It does. There's a staircase.
Oh, that's true. Because their apartment has an upstairs. Yeah, Kyle and
I tried diagramming this and it wasn't making sense to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like a...
It's a House of Leaves situation going on.
Exactly. Or like an Escher like drawing that just circularly goes around like a bunch of staircases that loop around over and over and over and over and over again.
So Overton is John Henton, and he's also too dumb to still be alive. And then he ends up in a relationship with Sinclair. And I'm like, you know, you guys have to like find a smarter person to like procreate with because your kids are going to be so dumb.
Or they'll be super smart. Like, you don't know.
You don't know.
I don't
Genetics
know.
Don't, like, True. They don't work like that. A dumb like, person and a dumb person don't make necessarily make have to make a dumb person.
Like, you watch, like, Step by Step.
Oh, my gosh.
Not a realistic portrayal of genetics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, either way, like, don't count them out. Like, that was also, like, a heartwarming moment and through line of that whole show as well.
It's very cute, but, like...
You fear for them and their future.
They're,
like, imaginary children.
Having seen a lot of episodes in rapid succession, sometimes both of those characters are written to be very dumb. And sometimes they're written to be like functionally kind of dippy. And sometimes I'm like, oh, God, like I am concerned for them. But they seem to like each other and they seem very happy together. So I'm not going to judge them for that.
Well, I found it romantic.
Well, the interesting thing about those two guys being part of the show is that if you look for promo footage and images, sometimes it's the four female leads together and the guys aren't there. But in the opening credits, it's all six of them. It is a six-person show.
Mm.
And initially, I always thought of the show as being like Golden Girls is like four older women and Designing Women is like four women in the South. And this is four black women living in New York. No, it is not that. It is Friends. It is Friends because it's six young people chasing their dreams and dating and finding romance in New York and contained in like a very small environment because they live so close to each other. And
Maxine is the Ross because she doesn't live in the building.
She is. And basically, Sinclair is the Phoebe. And you could actually probably draw lines and figure out Kim Coles is, what's her name? Regine is the Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And
Khadija is Monica. Like it adds.
Overton is Joey.
And I guess that makes the
Kyle
guy.
Kyle Chandler.
Is. Ooh. Yeah.
I've never thought of it that way.
Dude. So I thought I'd figure this out.
Well, look at this board with red string all over it.
I have a diagram.
I thought I was very smart to like figure this out. No. They all knew this. Everyone who was working on Living Single was completely aware of this. So it was created and showrun by Yvette Lee Bowser, who, by the way, was a producer on A Different World and then is now the showrunner on Dear White People, which made me very happy that that was a great through line for her career. Okay, so the Friends thing. The Friends thing is very important because there's this LA Times piece that ran in 1986, a month before this episode aired, all about how basically this show premiered in 1993. NBC was like, we want that. And they made a version of this show where they replaced all the black people with white people and it became Prince.
So that, I wasn't certain that was the direction you were going. So that makes me feel a little bit better about it because I'm like, that, what I thought you were going to say was that Friends, this is just a black Friends.
No.
And in fact, Friends is a white living single.
Exactly.
So that's how you should present it and say, oh, those characters are representations of
this was first. I'm going to explain all that in a second. But this Friends was such a juggernaut that it kind of dwarfs everything around it. And everyone thinks of Friends being the show that started this whole like sexy people in New York, like having jobs and going on dates. But it really, this was actually where it started. It just doesn't get any credit for it. And it didn't get credit back in 1986 because this article in LA Times ran where they interview Yvette Lee Bowser. And she says, it's disappointing that we've never gotten the kind of push that Friends had. I have issues with the studio and the network over the promotion of the show. Both of these shows were filmed at Warner Brothers in Burbank. And this one was first, Friends was second, and they were very well aware of how Friends was being treated versus how they were being treated. And the article quotes all four of the actresses, and it's amazing. Erica Alexander says, Friends is a really good sample of living single, which is like a very precise Max-like burn. Queen Latifah has a quote about how their billboard went up at the studio first, and then the Friends billboard went up the next year after that show began and turned into a hit.
Mm-hmm.
But the view of the living single billboard was actually blocked by the Friends billboard, which I cannot think of a better metaphor for the situation.
Yeah.
So she's saying like, it just pisses me off that every time I see the Friends billboard and the little piece of our billboard, I mean, how much more of a push do they need? They wanted Warner Brothers to support them the way they had been doing for Friends. Kim Fields says, but the minute they start referring to us as black friends, that's when I go off. It's better to call them the white living single.
That's what I just said.
That's what she said back in the day. So they all knew. And
I love that. I did not know that, but that's kind of brilliant. Like, I really love that little nugget that you've just revealed.
And Queen Latifah was on James Corden like 2 years ago, and he actually asked them I don't know why Laverne Cox is also there, but it's Queen Latifah and Laverne Cox together.
Why not? Why can't she be there?
I just don't know what they were promoting together necessarily. But he asked Queen Latifah about this whole like Friends living single thing. And she says, okay, here's what happened.
Wow. It was interesting because when Living Single came out, shortly thereafter, Warren Littlefield, who was president of NBC, they asked him if he could have any show on television, any of the new shows, which one would it be? And he said, Living Single. It was in the newspaper. And the next thing you know, here comes Friends, which was an amazing show. And they did a great job with it. So, I mean, if you're going to rock it, that's the way to do it.
I know what you mean. It was six people sharing apartments.
Yep, in the city.
In the city.
Life. And so, yeah.
And I was kind of already in a Friends can fuck itself mood. And this is really not helping.
Yeah, I didn't really watch Friends at all.
Aren't we talking about Friends next week?
Yes, we are. And I'm not going to have nice things to say about it, probably. Also, I close out all the episodes with a song, and every song is like picked because it ties into the like subject matter in some way or another. I think I want this one to be the original version of Tainted Love, which was sung by Gloria Jones as a soul single. And I don't think most people have not heard it. And it's a very good version of Tainted Love, but Tainted Love got a lot bigger as a new wave song by Soft Cell.
That's a good point.
Are we going to have to go to commercial before even talking about the episode?
No.
Okay.
I
was wondering if we would get back to it.
There is actually one more thing I do want to talk about before we get into it, though. So how comfortable do you guys feel discussing Queen Latifah's sexuality?
I think it's essential, especially given this episode that we're talking about.
It's super weird.
I'm curious what those discussions were.
We don't really even know if that something was being discussed openly on set because we really don't know.
Well, I mean, the rumors, I mean, not even like, I shouldn't even call them rumors, like her, you know, relationships were known back then, you know, like, I don't think that was really a secret. I don't think she really kept it a secret from, I mean, in life and outwardly, you know, publicly, yes,
right.
But those whispers were definitely out there back then. So I'm curious, for me personally, like this episode, I'm curious to see like,
it's fascinating.
Yeah, there were a lot of choices that were made. I mean, that could have been Khadijah's roommate from college.
That would have been a very different episode. It would be even like more personal, but maybe
personal and maybe even a little bit like meta, you know, to have all of those layers on top of it. Discussing the episode there's some layers that I would like us to unpack.
Super. Yeah.
Or peel back, because that's the most intriguing part of it to me, is Queen Latifah's presence and what role she played in this particular episode.
I just want to get everyone's okay that we're okay talking about it, because we've talked about
a lot. Get Queen Latifah's okay.
She's not going to give it, because I don't think she's ever going to come out, because she hasn't yet. So it's just not something she's interested in doing. It's her prerogative to do, but like, it still makes for an interesting episode to discuss. Also, we've talked about a lot of people who were closeted at the time the episode aired, but have since come out. This is the first time we've encountered someone who is not, I mean,
who's alive.
Yeah.
And out.
Yeah. Which is just a very interesting situation. Most of the people who were in glass closets, like Anderson Cooper and Jodie Foster, finally did come out, and we can talk about it now. She's kind of like maybe one of the most famous people who, like, her and John Travolta. Not that I want to compare her to John Travolta, but like...
I know, messy.
Yeah.
He finally shaved his head, though.
Good for him. Save some money on wigs. This episode aired is the 22nd episode of season 3. The first three seasons are all 27 episodes long, which is insane. That's not something that ever happens anymore. They made these ladies work
really
hard.
There are a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like even the fourth season was still in the 20s, wasn't it? And then the fifth one was
short.
13.
That was the only one short. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't find the Nielsen ratings for this week, but this show was the 85th most watched show. Friends was the third watched show. They aired opposite each other. So this aired the same night as a brand new Friends, and that wasn't helping Living Single, even though it was Fox's effort to be like, hey, like, Hispanic and Black viewers watch our stuff instead. And it worked to a degree, just didn't work enough.
I mean, I didn't watch Friends, so
You did your part.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the top shows for this week, it's literally like Friends, The Single Guy, Caroline in the City, and then Boston Common, which was going to be NBC's like new big thing and was basically a Friends-style show that just happened to take place in Boston rather than Manhattan.
Groundbreaking.
It did have a Black character, and it's the only one of all those shows that had a person of color in the main cast.
Huh.
It lasted two seasons. Her name was Tasha Smith, and she's still doing stuff. It was created by the guys who did Will and Grace. And do you remember Boston Common?
Yes.
Do you remember how the sister was, Wylene, was like the main character's younger sister?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that she's the voice of Yuna in Final Fantasy X?
Oh.
That's the thing she went on to do. This episode.
Did she also do that in Final Fantasy X too?
Yes.
Okay, well then she's a pop star technically.
She actually is a pretty good singer. This episode is written by Bill Fuller and Jim Pond, who'd written a few Night Courts together and who actually were producers on Living Single at the time. It was directed by Ray Krause, who I'm pretty sure is a female director. It might be the second female director whose episode we've discussed on the show. She did Fresh Prince and a few other shows.
Hmm.
Now, the episode. The episode opens with Sinclair making decorations for some sort of wedding party. And Khadija flipping through a yearbook, reminiscing about a roommate that was apparently very dear to her college experience, but we've never heard of before. Her name is Shayla. She's the one who's getting married. Right off the bat, I think a big difference between this and a lot of the NBC shows is that it's meaner, because there's Regine and Max genuinely seem to dislike each other. Like, they might have different dynamic in other episodes, but like, she comes in and looks at the yearbook over Khadija's shoulder and is like,
Okay, here we are. At a demonstration in front of the student union. That's me, there's Max, and that's Shayla.
Oh, that's Max's legendary roommate, huh? She's pretty. Oh, that's because she's standing next to Max.
That's a really mean, like, that's like, cool.
Yeah, their banter is particularly, like, harsh in this episode. I don't remember them being that, like, catty or that mean to each other, but it's still, like, it's still funny. Like, the stuff is really funny. And
yeah, I feel like my reaction to a lot of what they said was like, oh, they just said the thing that the other shows just hint at.
Yes.
Yeah. But like, there is definitely like an edge and a place that they would be able to go to in Living Single that really, I think, I mean, it worked, you know?
I think it's the Fox comedy dynamic versus the NBC dynamic.
That is true.
There's a little bit of like Married with Children meanness in it, but that's most of what I watched when I was growing up. So,
it's not like Max is like vulnerable. Like, Max feeds it right back, you know? So it's not.
That's true. And no one's picking on like Sinclair that way. It's the two like powerhouses picking on each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I also don't think it was pandering cruelty in the way that Married with Children could sometimes be.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't playing it for the audiences necessarily. I mean, they were. It's a sitcom, but like, that's just how their characters talk to each other.
Max shows up and she's excited that Shayla's going to be showing up. And she mentions that Shayla always bet that Max was going to be the one who would jump the broom first.
School, she bet me I'd be the first to jump the broom.
So she drank pretty much round the clock.
Regine, why don't you click your heels 3 times and go to hell?
And that was like the line that clinched it for me in this episode. It's like, oh, that's right. That's what this show is.
Yeah, it was a really good, like, they hit the ground running. And I think that that humor and that, you know, that it, like, it's there. That's what they do. That's the style of the show. That's their relationship. And that's the energy of Regine is always like snappy, has something, you know, quick to say, but Max has something even quicker to stay back, you know?
It's like family. Like,
yeah,
I say the cruelest things to my family sometimes. If anyone else is mean to my family, bite their heads off, maybe.
I never said anything about your family. Because, like, also, they both get kind of coded a little lesbian-y in this episode. This is a lot of complicated things happening.
I mean, I found it also interesting that her character was the one that has issues with the roommate mm-hmm. when her character traditionally is the one that wears, like, suits that's mm-hmm. a little bit more stereotypically, like, masculine. She works hard. She's always the go-getter.
She's a lawyer, which is an aggressive job.
Yeah.
She's an aggressive lawyer.
And they make it clear, like, that's what she is. She's, like, a career woman. And there are episodes where she... I mean, I feel like there are episodes where she kind of has to stand out and, you know, defy and break that glass ceiling mm-hmm. and stand up for, you know, women in the workplace. So I just found it like an interesting kind of...
She would be the one who also has a homophobia problem.
Yes. Yeah.
So which
but does she?
We learn it very shortly because Shayla shows up and Shayla is played by Karen Molina White, who I recognize as being Jazz's wife from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but you guys recognize as being Charmaine from Different World.
And the Felicia Rashad show.
I don't remember Erica Alexander or this actress on either of those shows, but they obviously were on both and somehow it just faded out of my memory. But I liked her from Fresh Prince because she has a very distinctive voice and she has like a lot of like energy in that voice. And she's very good in this role. She's like a cute little package of like a lot of power, basically. She's Shayla. She's the famous college roommate. And in real life, she was the longtime partner to Malcolm Jamal Warner, although they have since split up, which Mom said. Yeah.
Who's Malcolm Jamal Warner dating now?
Oh, I don't know.
I think I want to say it was like Regina King.
Oh.
But maybe not. I could be completely wrong.
Well, the first thing that comes up is Michelle Thomas from Family Matters, which is really sad.
Why is that sad?
Myra Monkhouse was the girl who was in love with Steve. And she died. She got a very aggressive form of cancer and she died very young.
What?
Yeah. So I don't know if they actually got married, but she was dating Malcolm Jamal Warner. And there's this like very like sad story about how the last thing she ever said was olive juice, because if you mouth the words olive juice, it looks like I love you. Mm. And it was like a private joke they had. It's very sad.
Oh my gosh.
I think she died while Family Matters was still on the air.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's why that character disappeared from the show.
Whoa.
Yeah. But I don't know who he's dating now, but so
it was somebody. I can't remember, but yeah. Okay.
Shayla's fiance is parking the car. And
her fiance name is Chris.
Chris is parking the car. And she's like, Max, there's something I should tell you. And it's extra weird thinking that like Khadija knows what's happening because she knows the secret the entire time.
You know what? I didn't even think that. Yeah. Later in the episode, that little reveal.
Not even reacting. And then, of course, Chris enters and Chris is played by Tanika Ray, a woman who is now the host of Extra, which is
what?
Oh, wow. She's I did extra. Not know that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know because I don't watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, surprise. I was like, oh, I did not know that.
It's possible you could just be shopping at the Grove and find out who was hosting Extra, but she's apparently been on it for 2 years. The reaction to it is one of the girls says, girl, and then Sinclair immediately starts pulling off the cake toppers, which are groom and bride.
Yeah.
Very joyously.
Lesbians. Meat!
And now that we've actually gotten to the episode, we're going to take a commercial break.
Okay, bye.
Hey, Glenn, I'm pretty sure you've been called a weirdo before.
I see you've been reading my yearbook again.
And probably a beardo?
Only when recreating that one scene from Alan.
I know what scene you're talking about.
It's a good scene.
Iconic. How would you feel about the term queerdo?
I'd have to see it on a t-shirt first.
Well, a Love Bazaar, downtown LA's dedicated space for queer art, is this Friday hosting the opening reception/book launch party for Queerdo, a new book by Steve Hannigan and Matthew Dean Stewart. It uses humor and imagination to poke fun at the absurd nature of thinking that any of us is more valuable than anyone else. We are all imperfect weirdos.
Drew, if I attend this event, can I be an imperfect weirdo with a drink in hand?
Yes, because Le Bazaar is located within Bar Franca, which is located at 438 South Main Street in downtown LA. The event runs from 7 to 11 p.m., and I think I might go to this one.
Did you say Friday, July 12th?
Yes, I did. And you can see all the cool stuff happening at Le Bazaar on Instagram at a Le Bazaar store.
A Le Bazaar.
Find yourself here.
Next Friday on a brand new Sliders.
The lightning created an electrical surge big enough to burn the whole thing out.
Make me invisible.
A freak accident leaves a young man trapped between worlds.
I fall into some kind of astral plane.
And separated from his true love forever.
I'm not gonna leave you.
A brand new Sliders next Friday.
It's the most controversial issue of our time. Now the battle over TV violence comes to Springfield.
If I ever stop loving violence, I want you to shoot me. Will do.
Phil Hartman and Kirk Douglas guest star.
When people see this, you'll be rich and famous.
On a brand new Simpsons, part of a 90-minute marathon, Sunday at 7, 6 Central.
Hey, Drew. What's going on in the world of Patreon?
Well, Glenn, this will be a quick update this week because other than the forthcoming art for the month of June...
But you gave them my holdover art, right?
If you're listening to this episode now, it's up. And then there's that Patreon-exclusive survey.
It turns out you want us to talk about The Nanny and Night Court, but not Barney Miller and Everybody Loves Raymond. Well, too bad. We're going to talk about Everybody Loves Raymond.
And I'm going to make you talk about Barney Miller, too. You'll like it, I swear. Other than that, there's just one item of business, and it's a new Patreon, Rob Browatsky. I mean, you're from Chicago. Browatsky? Is that how you pronounce that?
Okay.
Browatsky.
I don't know him, if that's what you're asking. We don't all know each other.
You may remember him as the guy who said on Twitter that listening to our podcast made him want to rewatch the movie Mannequin.
Everybody should rewatch Mannequin.
I agree. And as you probably know, anyone who donates $3 or more gets an on-air thank you by name and also gets assigned a random compliment from the box of compliments. So, Rob Browatsky, thank you. Glenn?
Well, the box of compliments isn't out, but I got one. He's more powerful than a handful of dead batteries.
I mean, I guess it's true because you could also throw the batteries at someone. Mm-hmm. And hug
I would them. Like to throw these batteries at you. I'm fondling some batteries right now, and they're dead.
That's weird. There's a lot going on there, Glenn. That is it for this week. If you like this show, please do make a donation at our Patreon page, patreon.com/gayestepisodeever.
It's also linked in the show notes, I hear.
Every little bit helps.
And we'd be made very happy to receive that cash.
Also, we at the moment do not have any new patrons to thank by name for next week. So if you were to make a $3 a month donation now, you would hear your name and get assigned a random compliment in next week's show. Will that lucky person be you?
Who are you pointing at?
That little girl who's dressed like a turn of the century orphan.
Oh, yeah. We're friends.
Oh, she's gone.
Oh, no. Jamal Warner shirtless.
Okay, so we're back. Max is really not okay with the fact that Shayla is marrying a woman, or at least with the fact that this news has just been delivered to her. And they don't shy away from making her be like kind of aggressively negative about it.
Max, I've heard so much about you. I mean, I feel like I know you.
Funny, I had you pictured a little differently. I thought you'd be a man.
If you heard her Yafet Koto impression, you swear she was.
Yafet Koto! Yafet Koto! Yafet Koto! That is funny. That is a funny man.
And there's this weird joke that Shayla makes about how, like, oh, you should hear her Yafet Koto impression. I don't know why he would have been, like, in the ether that's the one they would have used.
Yeah, at that time.
He was on Homicide: Life on the Street, but I just don't know if something was happening in 1996 that anyone would have a Yafet Koto impression.
I don't know. About that, but yes, Max is sort of like aggressive and cruel from the get-go, but and maybe I've just watched too many of these gay episodes,
mm-hmm.
but I was very quickly like not on her side, obviously, but like I understood where her aggression was coming from. I don't know if it's because it's a trope or if she played it with a little bit more hidden sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't feel as like I was going into this episode, like revisiting this episode with the expectation that I might end up being disappointed. Mm-hmm. And at every turn, I realized that this show is ahead of its time. It really was more progressive than I realized even at the time. Mm-hmm. And this episode, like maybe like a couple jokes, I think steered a little to like kind of like stereotypically disappointing. But overall, I think you're right, Glenn. Like I felt like it was very like genuine in the way that they kind of approached it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't strictly from a place of homophobia. I think it was from a place, or at least the way that Erica Alexander was playing it in Max, as the shock and surprise of seemingly a secret that she felt that she should have known. And it
right.
ended up playing more as a vulnerability that here's her best friend, one of her best friends, mm-hmm. not telling her something or not feeling close enough to tell her about something, and how that hurt her more than anything else.
Exactly. It was from a place of hurt. And even that line that should be a joke where she's like, funny, I picture you differently. I thought you'd be a man. Like in another sitcom, it would be like, oh, I thought you'd be taller with a beard. Mm-hmm. Like she didn't go for the joke. She went for...
Dude, she's being pretty honest.
Yeah.
They kind of treat it like a joke, but that, I guess that's just the audience. But yeah.
That's true. That's like a really good point, though. I think like it's important to point that out because it is very direct. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like the audience responds to that. It's not like it's played as a joke. Like there's a little bit of a, you know, lag that's in there in that moment to kind of allow for laughter. Mm-hmm. But the delivery of it is actually more of an honest delivery than one that's trying to fish for a punchline.
I agree. But they also have Sinclair to cut the mood.
You know, Max, I'm sorry. I mean, I tried to tell you for years, but every time I called, I just couldn't find the words.
I'm gay is a real toll saver.
So, girls, Peppermint Patty, is she or isn't she?
Which is something that kind of character would say. But then it cuts to Queen Latifah. And every time it cuts back to her, I'm just looking at her face being like, what is she thinking right now? Like, what is going through her head as this like scene is unfolding for her? And what is this like for her? Is this like interesting? Is it fun? Is it like weird for her?
Like, do you think she's like prideful about that moment? Like, do you think she's doing something groundbreaking? Like, you know, like, this is a big episode. This is an important episode. Or do you think she's still closeted enough at that point where she's like stressed out that this episode is about to air and she's a part of it?
I mean, she would go on to play a lesbian character and set it off. So she wasn't so uncomfortable with like that queer like veneer that like she didn't want to do that. But like she was also 3 years younger and like mm-hmm. not as far along in her career. I was also thinking about the fact that her... kind of a bit after this ended, she did a talk show.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
It didn't last very long. And this is actually not my theory. I think it was on You're Making It Worse. But they were talking about the fact that the show didn't connect because if you're hosting a talk show, you kind of have to be an open book, like the way Oprah was and talked about a lot of personal stuff.
Yeah.
And she didn't do that. And that kind of prevents you from like interacting with your audience, like a talk show audience, the way a talk show host actually probably needs to.
Yeah. Or expecting your guests to open up in a way that you're asking them to.
Yeah.
For an authentic, real interview. And you're kind of hiding behind this big secret.
And obviously her being in the closet does color her character's choice of not telling Max mm-hmm. that we'll find out in the next scene.
Yeah.
Of letting this all happen and letting like Max be embarrassed and hurt and horrified in public, all coming from the place of, it's not my secret to tell you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like which it's Shayla's secret.
Yeah, which I think is also kind of like pretty meta that she actually does know and she's in on it, which then makes you wonder, why does Khadijah know about Shayla being, you know, a lesbian?
Shayla and Chris walk out and Max walks them out and then they bump into Kyle, who is foppish and very concerned with the way he's dressed. His manner of speaking reminds me of, remember the joke on 30 Rock, Black Frasier?
Yes.
He sounds like Black Frasier a little bit, but also he's the voice of Kratos in God of War. That's mm-hmm. one of his like follow-up jobs after this. He's been voicing Kratos for kind of a long time.
I just started playing God of War for PlayStation 4.
I just started playing it maybe like 2 weeks ago.
I started playing it on Father's Day, so it was very...
That makes sense.
Weird.
And as far as I know, he is still doing the voice of the character. It's a very distinctive voice.
It's a very good voice.
Yeah, it sounds like it's. I was actually wondering who that is and why it's so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And you have answered yet another puzzle for me.
Welcome to Drew's Box of Mysteries.
I know, so random.
So he tries to hit on the girls and they shut him down hardcore.
They're not having it.
And who are these two gorgeous women who obviously don't realize the awful company they're keeping?
Chris and Shayla from Seattle. The grinning peacock is Kyle.
It's nice to meet you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.
Hello.
Hello. And should you require a tour of our fair city, I am the ultimate guide to Gotham.
Great. You can show us all the lesbian hangouts.
They leave, and then Overton comes in and kind of implies that he's driven Max to lesbianism, which, whatever. And then there's this other weird plot between these two about how Kyle tells Overton that he needs to dress better and, like, refers him to his, like, personal tailor.
Yeah.
So he goes off to do that, and that comes back in a very... That's like, kind of the only B plot, and it's just a weird thing. But that goes somewhere kind of gay very quickly. So the next scene is what you're talking about, where Max is being like, can't believe Shayla hid this secret from us the entire time. And Khadijah's like, well...
If Shayla didn't feel close enough to share something this important until now, what does it say about our friendship? I mean, come on! Aren't you a little upset finding out like this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm upset. I'm damn upset.
Hold up! When did she tell you?
Just a little bit before you, that's all.
How much before?
Junior year.
I mean, does everybody know? What is it, the joke's on me?
Max, she just wanted to tell you in her own time.
Well, when would that be, after the second turkey baster baby?
But I think that also makes this quite the, like, progressive episode as well, because it very early on, they kind of veer away from the typical, like, tropes of, like, a very special episode of whatever 90s sitcom when it tackles, like, a gay episode or a gay issue. And I think what I like about this detail is that, you know, there is more of a reveal or more of a reason why she didn't tell Max.
Yeah, you know? It's not for no reason. Like, there's a good reason why Max has not been told.
And again, it, like, steers it away from, like, homophobia and teaching a lesson.
Right.
And more about, you know, something more personal.
Becomes more about allies.
And
like friendship and like honesty and what you reveal and what you share with friends. Because I've had friends even who were hurt by the fact that I didn't tell them that I was gay until I decided to tell them I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, why wouldn't you? They internalize that and they personalize that as if it's something that's so essential and so specific to who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you not revealing that must in some way mean that you're not as close as you thought you were. Or that you're not as good of friends as you were, you know?
Right.
And when you bring it to that, I think it makes it something that's very universal. Instead of teaching a lesson and, like, pointing a finger and being like, Max, you can't be a homophobe. Mm-hmm. And it's not about, again, like, it's not about the homophobia.
No.
It's more about that personal, you know, aspect of it, their friendship. And I think that's what's really brilliant about the writing of this episode is that it finds that universality in, you know, what it means or what you know or what you feel about a friend and what that means if you don't know everything about that person. Does Which that make sense?
Yeah. But what it means is that it doesn't reflect badly on you at all. It's probably about the other person's choices and don't take it too personally.
100%.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't think is done really well on other
shows. No. And it takes us a few scenes to get there, but we do get there. But before that, there is this. So Khadijah walks into the living room and Sinclair's hanging up a banner that says, Welcome Lesbians.
Nice banner.
It's a very nice banner. But there's a point where Queen Latifah is standing behind a banner that says, Welcome Lesbians. And then she tears it down. I'm like, this symbolism is like.
Again.
Yes. Like that had to be on some level a little bit weird for her. She's like, oh, okay, that's fine. And then Sinclair is Khadijah's cousin. And they have a conversation about how Sinclair says, I've never met anyone. I don't know anyone who's gay.
All right. I'll admit it. I'm not up on lesbian etiquette. It's not like I've ever known any before.
Aunt Gladys was gay.
Aunt Gladys was not gay. She just never found the right man. Like her roommate, Aunt Hazel.
But like, it's also weird to be like, no, she's not gay. She just was always with women and she never talked about it. But like, Queen Latifah was like, okay, but we know she was gay. And I was like, this is too much. Like, this is like very like personal to her life. It's just very on the nose, but they did it. Yeah.
But she's still doing it to this day. Like, yeah, she is a rock. Like, you are not going to shake the lesbian out of her.
No, I mean, there's no reason why she has to, I guess. But like, I just wonder, like, what would it take? I'm sure her friends know. If you're Queen Latifah's friend, tweeted us.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people know. I don't know. I mean, at this point, I don't know what she gains by not coming out, but that privacy is important to her, alleged privacy or supposed privacy. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't get it. But I know it's her, obviously her choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, live your life however you live it. I don't get it.
Yeah, I would love to hear the reasoning, but like, she's not going to do that because why would you tell me?
Yeah, I mean,
But what if she came on this podcast and came out?
That would be amazing.
That would be incredible. Go for it. Somebody tweet
Someone make
her.
That happen.
Yeah.
I'm sure we know someone that knows her, right? We probably do.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think that would get us a lot of rating reviews.
I don't know what the end result of that would be, but a lot of people
listen to this podcast, like us, wherever you listen to podcasts, write a review. Yeah.
If we get 50 5-star reviews, Queen Latifah will come out.
Put that challenge out to our listeners.
I think we have 50.
Shit.
Yeah.
There you go. Here she comes.
Regine comes downstairs and she's dressed like a tomboyish lesbian. She's wearing like... Not like cute. She dresses like
a sweatsuit, like a tracksuit.
And a hat.
But it all still matches and looks cute.
Matches, looks cute. It's a little baggy
it didn't really work for her body type.
Which I thought was also a weird choice, but okay.
So like, it comes up later that why it's a weird choice, but it's just interesting. It's like, if you ever want to see Kim Fields dressed like a tomboyish lesbian, this is the episode to see it because she does it.
But so now she's the Joe.
Yeah, she becomes the Joe for a second. And she's doing it specifically so she doesn't break any hearts, because all of the lesbian friends are coming over to the house for the wedding shower.
What the hell is this?
I'm thinking of our guests. You know I'm cute. And you know how enticing I usually look. Why put out the banquet if they can't eat?
Well, you succeeded. You definitely look like a sack lunch.
So she's trying to play it down, but by dressing like a lesbian. It's a very poor plan. But then lesbians start coming over, and right after that happens, we go back to the hallway where we see Overton dressed up like Kyle. So we've just had Regine and lesbian drag, and then we have this scene where like Overton is dressed like Kyle, so they're like a doubling, and you're like, oh, like they kind of look like they might be one of those gay couples that look the same. And then
that's right. There is a joke in there.
It happens. So then one of the party guests comes in, and it's Maren Dungey, who is Francie from Alias.
Yep.
And also she's the cop on
Big Little Lies.
I almost said Pretty Little Liars again.
Yep. I tried to save you from it, but you said it anyway.
And she was also recurring on Malcolm in the Middle, and she also played Ursula on Once Upon a Time. Looking at her filmography, it was like, oh, you get to do a bigger range of stuff than most actresses do. You're all over the place.
She does. Awesome.
Yeah.
Wasn't her sister head of like creative content at ABC and is now over at Netflix?
There was a woman named Dungey, by the last name Dungey, who's the one who like actually canceled Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
I
think they are. I could be wrong, but I think they are.
Let me look that up actually, because that is extra bonus points if her relative is.
Why is that more points?
Because
yes, they're sisters. Oh my gosh, you're right. I just think it's cool, like, because I like Francie, and I like how much she's done. But I also want to give points for her sister, who's the one who like canceled Roseanne. Was like, no, that's it. You don't get a second chance. Fuck you.
That's huge. Like, yeah. Was huge at ABC and is now pretty big over at Netflix.
My brother's never gotten me a job.
Mine? No, mine neither. That's fine. There's still time, right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll surprise you.
You'll be fine. So she comes in, and Overton and Kyle are having a fight about the fact that Kyle does not like that Overton has bit his entire style.
Oh, Overton, you look good enough to bury.
Well, thank you, my little Paul Bear, but owe it all to Kyle and his tailor extraordinaire, Mr. Mfume.
Good looking ass.
What the hell is this? I mean, you have stolen my whole look. Everything from the button pattern to the cut of the pleats. These are original touches that I created with Mr. Infume. And what's that?
Well, I guess, lapels?
No. Those are Barker lapels. And they are gracing the suit of a man who believes do not bleach is a designer label.
Man, get up off your high horse. Mr. Infume said I was a tailored dream, whereas you have some sort of turkey neck thing working that makes fitting you a challenge.
Well, excuse me for having a bold Adam's apple.
Kyle, just get over yourself, man.
Oh, I know these lovers' quarrels can be rough, but if it's any consolation, think how passionate it's going to be when you make up.
Oh, no. No, there ain't no lovers' quarrel. See, he's just mad because he thinks I'm wearing his clothes.
Damn! Which is a weird thing to say to strangers.
No one would ever say that to strangers ever. That's not how humans would ever talk. But, like, I like that it was like, oh.
Would they not? I don't know. Like, depending on the situation, maybe at a bar.
Maybe.
Maybe at a bar. Maybe not in, like, somebody's, like,
yeah,
vestibule in their brownstone that you've never met.
Right.
I don't know. Like, you know. It's,
yeah, like a catty bar fight is one thing.
Heck yeah.
I like that in my, as a viewer, I was like, oh, like they kind of look like a gay couple. And then they immediately capitalized on that. And they also are very shortly going to capitalize on the whole thing where Regina's dressed like a lesbian. Max is not happy to be at this wedding shower. She's not hiding it. And it kind of, even knowing that she feels betrayed, I kind of feel bad for lesbian bride because that's a psychic thing to go through.
Well, Max, I owe you $5, remember? I bet you that you'd be the first to take the plunge.
Why don't you keep it? You hold on to things so well.
Her gift is inappropriate. Her gift was purchased back when she thought that Shayla was marrying a man. So it's like
still a shitty gift.
It's not very
good. Which is still like his and her boxers. Like boxers and, you know, panties.
She's a lawyer. She can do better.
Oh, yeah.
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 So it's at this point she makes another comment and Shayla's like, we got to go in the kitchen right now.
I bought that last week before I found out what everybody else has apparently known since the Ice Age.
Max kitchen.
Sure, after you.
Suddenly I'm feeling pretty good about my rice cooker.
In this entire time, I have actually kind of been on the fence with, like, you're being really rude to your friend, even if your feelings are hurt.
Yeah, like you're being a shitty friend.
But her acting when... So they have the argument and Shayla reveals, the reason I never told you is that I was in love with you.
Was that?
How could you tell Khadija and not me?
Trust me, Max, I had my reasons.
Like what?
Look, I don't have to tell you.
Why, what, you didn't think I could handle having a roommate that was gay?
No, I didn't think you could handle having a roommate who was in love with you.
We get our commercial break.
Like a very quick commercial break, and then they come back to it. They're still in the same places. Her reaction to it is she's not being mean, or she's very vulnerable, and she's very confused, and she's like just struggling for words. And actually, that was the point in the episode where I was like, oh, you're a really good actress. Like, because you weren't in like mean, catty, zinger mode anymore.
Yeah, she does lost for words better than a lot of sitcom actors due to the bum, like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Now, you were what? You felt what? You said what?
See, I knew you couldn't handle it.
What? I'm handling. What? Wait. How long have you been in, you know, not that way about me.
And it's important because I think that delivery of that particular moment has to be delicate and it's believable throughout. I think like throughout the whole episode. So all those awkward moments and all those moments where, again, it could have easily just flown into like homophobia and that being the theme of the episode. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's more about acceptance of your friend. And ultimately, like, that's what it, you know, should be about. You should be supportive, you know, to your friend. And the reason that she was like so vulnerable is because she felt like she was missing out on all these things that she should have known about, you know, her friend.
Right. I think it comes up a little bit later how, like, she said that she missed out on, like, bagging on all of Shayla's, like, girlfriends. She, like, she would have ripped on them if she had the chance, and she feels bad that, like, that was something she never had access to.
Yeah. So she's acting out not because of her, you know, best friend being gay.
Right.
It's more about the fact that she never knew.
It's interesting. So we've done like almost 30 episodes of this show, and we've dealt with so many reactions to straight people being uncomfortable around there suddenly being a gay person there and them not knowing how to react. Her reaction is different because what Max says to her is like, well, you know, I was straight, right? And Shayla's like,
when we first met in the dorm and you introduced yourself as Max the Maverick, I didn't know what to make of you. Then, before I knew it, we were best friends. Then I realized I was in trouble.
There's got to be a beer in here somewhere.
I mean, there I was in the backseat of Dexter Finley's Firebird wondering what kind of person has sex with sunglasses on. And I realized I'd rather be with you.
But you knew I was straight, right?
Well, I did wonder. Every time you rant about how men were like snorting warthogs without charm.
It was those volleyball shorts I used to wear, wasn't it?
It was a lot of things, Max. I mean, you're an incredible woman. And for years, I kept comparing you to everybody I met. And then when Chris came along, I realized I stopped comparing. I realized she was the one.
She does not have a big reaction. She doesn't really react at all. She gets very quiet and her lines are very controlled. And she's kind of seems like she's having a reflective, contemplative reaction to the news that, like, oh, okay, I seem kind of gay. It's a different interaction than I think we've seen in any other episode before.
Yeah, Max's reaction in this episode has entirely been from a place of personal hurt and not like politics or moral argument or even discomfort. Like, yeah. I never once believed that she's uncomfortable with lesbians.
Right.
Right. Right.
Even though this might be how it is supposed to be coming off to like some of the characters on the show necessarily. I don't know. We understand where she's coming from. Also, because we've watched a lot of these episodes at this point. And then she kind of gets it. And then she goes into this like, I don't even know if I'm going to go to the wedding.
Well, I'm very glad you found someone you can be yourself around. Of course, I am assuming she knows you're gay. I'm sure it'll be a beautiful ceremony.
Wait, you're going to be there, right?
Well, gee, I don't know, Shay. I mean, what would people think? Everyone whispering about the other woman.
Fine, Max. Don't come. The reception hall doesn't allow children anyway. And by the way, those volleyball shorts, they weren't all that.
That's a sucky thing to say. Shayla's reaction is like, well, maybe you shouldn't. The wedding hall doesn't accept like children anyway. I was like, is that a thing? Can you have like a wedding reception, a place where the kids are not allowed?
Yeah, or you can decide not to have kids. Like some people, I've been to weddings where they're like, no kids.
That sounds great.
It's like heaven.
Yeah, that means that you can get as drunk as you want and you're not going to...
You would not have been stopped.
Well, I mean, I think it takes... Like, I like kids, so I'm like, whatever, you know? If you want to have a cute moment and like, you know, dance on the dance floor and, you know, have fun at the kids' table for a little bit, like, that's fine. I don't mind. Like, I don't think they take away too much from the whole experience of a wedding. But I also understand the people that make a decision to have a wedding without children. So that for that particular reason where you can cut loose and get drunk and
just kick at the ground, not worry about like,
Somebody else to like babysit. Like, no, it's a wedding. No disruptions, no interference, no crying babies.
Children freak me out. They're like,
really?
Yeah. They're like little, they're like people, but they're small and they see everything. And I'm worried that like, I'm going to say something in front of them. That's going to, they're going to be like, oh, what is death? And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that in front of you, small child. Go ask your mom. I don't think I've ever been to a child-free wedding. And there's a hotel in Palm Springs I really like. And one of their policies is 21 and up. Not because it's like sexy or anything. They just don't want kids there. And
but it also is sexy.
Right.
It's fine. It's, yeah. It's something about the idea that like, I will not run into a child here. I find to be very comforting. That's just me. I have some problems. Shayla leaves. Max goes into the living room and reveals the big news to everyone. And they're all very interested in the fact that, like, Khadija did not know, because she reacts the same way that Regine and Sinclair, like, they're like very surprised.
Oh, yeah. Glass is dropped.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you will not believe what Shayla told me in the kitchen.
Oh, Lord, not more whining about the college roommate.
Seems in college she was madly in love with me.
Yo, girl, when did
Wait a minute. What the hell is she seeing you?
They're like, oh, okay, we all want to talk about it.
Everybody's shocked.
And I think it's Khadija who has the very good point that she's like, well, did she ever hit on you the entire time you guys were living together? And Max is like, no. And she's like, that is how much your friendship meant to her. That she had those feelings and she did not act on them because she knew it would fuck up the friendship and she'd rather be friends with you than, like, be with you.
And then Max gets the best line ever.
Don't make me go back and rethink this. I've already come up with a bitterness I feel very comfortable with.
Which I just want to put on a t-shirt and wear every day.
A bitterness you feel very comfortable with?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a good one.
She's like, fuck, I gotta go sort this out. And she leaves. And then it cuts to the resolution of the Overton and Kyle plot line, but I don't actually understand what it is.
I'm so bored by. Yeah.
But so, like, they seemed gay for a second, and that ties into the A plot, and I'm like, okay with that. But I guess you have to have another note where they finish it up. But I don't actually understand what happened.
So what happened is that Overton made up fake business cards that say the tailor that Kyle shared with him.
Mr. Infamy or Mr. Infume?
Infume.
It is Infume.
It's okay. Infume.
Okay.
That Mr. Infume is advertising the cut of his lapels.
The Kyle Barker lapels.
Yes. And so he's very excited about this, gets very into design. And there is a tag on the end of the episode with, like, the runway.
That makes
sense.
That's
right. Okay. That's right.
But, like,
which is a fantasy. It's not a real thing.
But he thinks that Mr. Infume wants to go into business with him. So that is a very short-term solution. He's going to very quickly invite him, like, no, I don't want to go into business.
Yeah, but the universe will reset next episode. It's fine.
But then we are in the final scene, which is Shayla getting her hair done at a hair place called the Coiffy Drop. It's like coif with an extra F-E at the end. Like, it's very subtle. You see it on the, like, the smock she's wearing. And I'm like, that's kind
terrible.
That's kind of a pun that makes sense almost, but not
I hate
really.
It.
Not their best. Not their best writing.
Max goes in, guns a-blazing, because I think that's her only motive.
Not actually guns a-blazing. I feel like...
Right, let's be clear. Yeah. In 2019, that could have been...
Yeah. That is metaphorical. And Shayla's like, you cannot be mad at me for not telling you, then also simultaneously be mad at me for telling you.
Max, taking your little humiliation tour on the road?
All right, look, we gotta talk.
Can it wait until I'm back under the dryer?
Ladies, I can't create with this kind of tension. I'll go flirt the other bride.
Look, come on. This whole thing just took me by surprise.
Max, you can't have it both ways. You can't be mad at me for not telling you and then mad at me because I did.
Well, how'd you expect me to react when you told me how you felt?
How do you think I felt when I told you and you looked at me like I said I was sleeping with Rush Limbaugh?
I like the conversation they have, but my favorite part is when Shayla says, how do you think it feels to give information like that and have your friend look at you like you just said that you're having sex with Rush Limbaugh? And as she says this, Shayla walks across the room and Max follows her. And it's not a joke line because the audience doesn't laugh at it because they're laughing at something else. But she says,
when you looked at me like I said I was sleeping with Rush Limbaugh.
That's just sick. I mean, this is just going to take me a little time.
That's just sick. And then goes into the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, what an interesting, like, the idea of having sex with Rush Limbaugh is just sick. And that's not even a joke on this show.
Right. Like,
and it's full still stop. Timely mm-hmm. today, which is horrible.
Can you believe that he's still alive? Like.
The genie lied to me.
Yeah. Like.
Well, I guess it's not right after. It's soon after. But my favorite part is, I guess, ultimately the resolution of this conversation mm-hmm. where Max just comes back and says,
girl, look, maybe if you would have confessed all this back in school, maybe I would have freaked. But the point is, I wish you would have given me the chance to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, I guess you're right. If we had talked about it back then, maybe I wouldn't have gotten such a crappy shower gift from you.
Maybe I would have reacted poorly in the moment, but we won't know. And I wish that you had giving me the chance to rise to the occasion.
Oh, see, that is not my interpretation of it. My interpretation, I'll go back and cut it in since I could be entirely wrong, but I thought she was saying, well, you didn't tell me back in the day, and I might have freaked out if you had told me, but the fact that she didn't tell her back then meant that they stayed friends and they had that continued relationship. So Max was feeling like she was okay with being told under these circumstances at long last. That was my interpretation, but I could be wrong.
No.
You are wrong. I think,
yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, you're very wrong.
You're wrong, Glenn is right.
Okay.
I mean, you're right about a lot of stuff this episode, but
No, she was saying I could have freaked out. Maybe it would have gone poorly, but I could have also surprised both of us by being a big person.
Interesting.
And you're one of my best friends. You can tell me anything.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a nice ending. And this is when they have the conversation about, like, I could have bagged on all your girlfriends. And there's a weird, like, fat joke in there that I'm like, that wouldn't happen today.
I can imagine some of the heifers you must have gone out with.
Only one heifer. And she didn't start out that way. She just had this thing for comfort food.
That was one of the only parts that would be cut out if this was an episode that would be happening, like, in 2019.
I would also cut out the turkey baster joke.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
The turkey baster joke?
It was,
it's right around here, right?
No, it was earlier. It was like when the welcome lesbian sign was happening. Someone makes a turkey. Oh, Max makes a turkey baster baby joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only joke where I was like, no, please go away.
I feel like I missed that.
It ends with like the double prank, which is kind of cute. Like they have to wrap it up some way. But like,
by the way, is there a reason why your dreads are so fuzzy in the front?
Fuzzy?
You always were an easy mark.
You always were a pain in the ass.
I knew it! You haven't gotten her out of your system! We're through.
Oh, no. You know I don't like her like that. Now come here.
Now who were you calling an easy mark?
Well, also the prank element of their friendship just never stuck for me, especially because like,
I mean, it was Max, a heavy episode.
Yeah, like, it's not like Max's first reaction when she shows up with a lesbian bride. It was like, oh, is this another prank?
If the prank thing had been
interrupted. I mean, they said something before she found out that Chris was a woman, but I can't remember what the little entry.
Oh, she's like, oh, is it going to be one of my exes?
Right. Right, when she's like, there's something I probably should have told you before now. It's like,
yeah, oh, that's probably. Right. Yeah. But even like their little greeting when they said hello was some like little like cutting like remark or
like
something.
Like 666
on your forehead. Oh, yeah, which was also weird. It's like, what?
They can't all be perfect zingers. There's enough good zingers that like.
But there are so many. Like the pacing and just the general comedy. Like Living Single still holds up pretty well.
I was saying offline before we started that it was nice to watch a show that gave me all the feelings of a familiar 90s sitcom. It was one I basically hadn't seen before and can like plow through five seasons of. You guys are right. It's never that we're never forced to think that Max is homophobic, just that she had her feelings hurt. And that's one of the better ways to handle this sort of situation. Hasn't really been handled in any other show that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the end credits with the
fashion. We don't need to talk about that. Never again. Yeah. Unless you have.
No, I was bored by that storyline. So no, I'm over it.
Any final thoughts about Living Single, Justin?
I'm glad I got to revisit it. Like it really is a great show. And I love the little, the story about the fact that it was what Friends ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I will forever now think of Friends as the white Living Single.
Yep.
I think that's the take home. Every listener needs to realize that.
I stopped listening a while ago.
No.
Rude.
I don't think they usually don't actually, because we can see metrics for like people. If they stop listening, they stop listening in like the first like 3 or 4
early,
minutes.
Yeah.
And then if they get past like that, they usually stay almost till the end. So they're probably.
Hello.
They're probably still. Hi. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
There is another gay episode. There's an episode called Swing Out Sisters where the four of them go to a gay bar. And it is also interesting. And basically Queen Latifah has an interaction with a trans woman, and it's kind of progressive. Like,
we do that episode next season?
I would like to do that episode next
season. Well, then stop talking about it.
That didn't spoil anything.
Bold it for me.
I mean, that would be
there we go. I'd be curious to see how they handle that progressively as well. Like, I now want to go back and see like who wrote that wrote this episode, and you know all those details therein, and give Living Single another like revisit and watch from the beginning.
It's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu in entirety. And
that's where I watched this episode.
At the end of that James Corden interview with Queen Latifah and Laverne Cox. Laverne Cox says,
"A little Polaroid on my wall.
Everything. Is anybody going back right now to Living Single and like the full?
Feel free to watch us. Watch Living Single. Catch up.
If you don't know Living Single, you need to get your education. Like that's."
Glenn, closing thoughts. That's. I'm gonna edit that out.
No.
No.
Keep it.
I've already proven you wrong once this episode. That's why I want to end on.
Okay, that sounds fair. Dr. Justin, if people want to find you online, where's the easiest place for them to find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at YoungDocJustin. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they can see my short film, That's Me on the Right, at thatsmeontheright.com or on Vimeo.
We'll put a link in the show notes so people can find it.
Thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. Glenn.
I'm very tired. Do it for me.
You can find Glenn on Twitter at I Write Wrongs. That's right with a W. And Glenn's on Instagram at Bros Quartz, BROSQUARTZ. Yes, that is a Steven Universe reference.
Thank you.
You can find this podcast on Twitter at Gayest Episode. We're on Facebook, and you can listen to all previous episodes at GayestEpisodeEver.com. As we mentioned earlier, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/GayestEpisodeEver. Please give us money. We like it. And this is a Table Cakes podcast. If you want to listen to the other shows on the Table Cakes Network, please go to tablecakes.com.
Anything else?
Just thinking. I think that's episode over, guys.
Bye forever.
Forever?
He says that every time.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away. I've got to get away from the pain you drive into the heart of me. The love we share seems to go nowhere. And I was not right. For I toss and turn and can't sleep at night. What's I read to you?
Table Cakes production.